I got into some Twitter kerfuffle last night.
I saw that. What are you thinking?
Are you not?
I like that you did it in the evening too. So I find that I am most likely to tackle long time complicated domestic chores like fixing a door jam.
Yeah.
About 6 minutes before I'm supposed to go to sleep, yeah. And I'm really pissed off.
Well,
maybe you do Twitter.
No. So,
which
so
is an even worse
I,
idea.
I put that out earlier in the day. So, for folks who haven't seen, if you don't know these names, then you live a blessed life. And I am sad that I have to curse you with knowing any of the names that I am about to tell you. Libs of TikTok, the once anonymous account that reposts. Either cringy liberals who have multicolored hair and various different genders, they do that, or their new thing is railing about drag queens and where drag queens should and shouldn't be in relation to children. She did her first interview where she was there in person. It was on a Tucker Carlson on his Fox Nation show, I believe. And it seemed to me that she happens to bear a striking resemblance to Washington Good. Post columnist Taylor Lorenz. Great. And they showed a picture. There is a picture of both of them side by side. And so I put on Twitter that screen grab and I just said, are we going to keep pretending that they're not the same person? All right. Now, I didn't tag anybody. I didn't tag Taylor Lorenz. I didn't tag Libs of TikTok. There were a few people that were like, who are those people? The only person I responded to was somebody saying, who are those people? And I said, I'm not going to tell you. If you don't know, you're living a better life. Well, somebody snitch tagged me and threw Taylor Lorenz's handle in there. So Taylor Lorenz writes, the following.
It's very long. She was not happy.
No, she was not. I would describe her as less than pleased with my antics. I've been forced to spend all day dealing with ongoing misogynistic hate campaign and Tucker LOTT fans, Libs of TikTok fans attacks. I can't even begin to explain how overwhelming it is to have to deal with this level of hate and threats, but sure, let's pick apart my appearance. Ha ha ha. Two white women with brown hair. LOL. One runs a hate account that says gay people shouldn't exist. And the other is a journalist who's done extensive investigative reporting. They're basically the same person because women. Am I right? Liberal men, conservative men, the one uniting factor they all have online is endlessly dissecting my appearance for retweets and likes. I'm too young. I'm too old. I'm too fat. I'm too sickly thin. I look Jewish. I don't look Jewish. It's misogyny through and through.
Am I a misogynist
who's picking apart Taylor Lorenz's looks? Who, by the way, that was not the first time that Taylor Lorenz has been on television. If anything, I was dissecting Libs of TikTok's looks, and even then, it was just pointing out that they look they have a center part, and they both wear long earrings.
Well, and so that was the thing when you sent it to me. I looked at the two pictures. I'm like, these women look exactly the same. Exactly the same. And I think it's funny. Obviously, like, I don't get offended. I feel like Taylor Lorenz gets offended for a living. So
I too am offended. Let me say that everyone, but in particular women and in particular ones on Twitter, are all unique, beautiful rainbows that are special in their own way. These are completely different looking people. I can't even see the resemblance that the two of you have, I guess, just because I'm so anti-massage. The joke's running out of steam. I don't care about any of this.
Yeah. I don't see misogyny in this at all. I don't see hate in this at all. I think what she was offended by is pretending they aren't the same person. She took that as their personalities are the same, where it's like, he's clearly making a reference to the fact that you look like twins. And I don't think that's an insult. You didn't say they were ugly. They're both very pretty girls. They just look like twins. And it is what it is.
I got one. Folks that love Battlestar Galactica, Michael Hogan, who played Saul Tai, looks auspiciously like John McCain. Once you see that, you could never see Battlestar Galactica, which I hope you watch once per year at least. It's never quite the same again. Now, me noting that, am I a man hater? No, I just have a sharp eye for people that look like John McCain.
Yeah, I can see, like, if she's been getting a lot of flack, like, I can see her being oversensitive. But my God, I mean, I don't think it was a mean.
Didn't we cover this lady a few months ago? She's the one that was.
She's a reactionary for sure.
The irritating flame out.
No. She is not Felicia Somnes. She was another Washington Post employee who couldn't get off Twitter. But Taylor Lorenz has done a much, much, much better job of being on Twitter and promoting her articles and being a personality. It just so happens that her mortal enemy at the current moment is Libs of TikTok, who had not been seen on camera until yesterday, at which point it was revealed that they look exactly alike.
They do.
Like, it's just, how is that not a funny idea? It's not a funny idea. Now, I am not seriously insinuating that they are the same person. I'm not seriously insinuating that in a world where clicks equals attention and attention equals clicks, that somebody who reports exclusively on internet bullshit might create an alter ego that was totally made up of whole cloth, a sock puppet of all sock puppets that she would then drive up and drive the attention to until she herself is the one to reveal their name, therefore bringing it into a much larger nuclear explosion of attention. I'm not seriously saying that they then might look to reveal this situation by going on Tucker Carlson, and Tucker Carlson, for whatever reason, decides to continue to go with it. I'm not seriously insinuating that during that Tucker Carlson segment, she drops hints that Ron DeSantis invited her to the Florida governor's mansion. So in the case that she would have to give up the ghost, at least there are now publicly available receipts of things that would be a bigger story beyond that. I am not seriously in any way insinuating that Taylor Lorenz and Libs of TikTok are the same person. That would simply be ridiculous.
Speaking of attention, Justin Robert Young does not love at all the fact that there's 110,000 views on that tweet. He hates it.
Oh, I just showed Ashley and she's like, oh, how are you feeling? And I'm like, you think the darkness is your ally? Like, I was born in it, molded by it. This is, oh, please, come on, all of it. It is so funny. The funniest part about it is that now the Libs of TikTok people, who are not yet mad at me, although they will be if this keeps going forward and I keep trying to insinuate that Taylor Lorenz and Libs of TikTok need to be in the same room and have a picture taken of them with a paper from that day to prove that they are not the same person. But right now, most of the Libs of TikTok people in my mentions are just saying, well, obviously Libs of TikTok is prettier.
I can't. Who's who? I honestly don't know which one is which. I honestly can't tell. I don't know. It's like stunning how much alike they look. I don't know.
So this is a real question. In that screen grab, Libs of TikTok is the one on the left. She's the one in studio. And then Taylor Lorenz is the one in the file footage.
Okay, I was going to guess the opposite. It's like, it's so funny. And I love too that we're calling her Libs of TikTok. Does she not have a name?
No. Raya Chaychek or something. I can't remember her name.
So we don't know what it is.
And that's only known because in Taylor Lorenz's article about the Libs of TikTok account, she was the first person to publish her name. Her name had not been published. So that's a thing that you'll see a lot, is that Taylor Lorenz doxed Libs of TikTok, which I do think there's a nuanced argument to whether or not Libs of TikTok reaches a certain level of public figure that you should report their name. But that's a larger conversation. That's actually serious. Unlike the dumb shit that happens on Twitter, which is what is happening right now.
Yeah. All the things she's accusing you of saying you didn't say. That's my favorite part. I'm too old. I'm too fat. I look sickly thin. I look Jewish. I don't look Jewish. He said none of those things. None of those things.
I want to say I have never heard Justin speculate on the Jewishness or lack thereof of any of the aforementioned people.
But no. Let's wait until we get to the Santos segment.
We've got some questionable Jews. We've got some questionable Jews coming up a little bit later in this program. From Austin, Texas, I am Justin Robert Young.
From Palm Springs, California, I'm Jen Briney.
From Edmond, Oklahoma, the Prague of Oklahoma, I'm Andrew Heaton.
And we're not wrong on this edition of the program. Aside from rampant misogyny, we will be discussing George Santos confessing. We will talk about the travel hell that is Southwest Airlines, and we will get to all of your email. Heaton, you are driving back down to Austin. Did you have any weather related travel kerfuffle on the way up to Oklahoma?
I did not. The only thing that occurred to me is that I ended up leaving a little bit late. I was burning the midnight oil on the Christmas special, and I had planned to drive up to Oklahoma, I think on Wednesday or Thursday. But I was going to have to leave at 5 o'clock and drive the 7 hours in the dark. And it was right after the temperature had crashed to like 10 degrees or so.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, for safety purposes, it just seems like I ought to be able to have clear visibility. So I left the following day, mid morning, and it was the easiest drive. There was no precipitation. It was just cold outside. That was it. Totally unremarkable. I've had a very, very easy, very blessed Christmas. The only downside of my Christmas was that my brother didn't bring a suit of armor so that I could wail on it with tennis balls. That's literally the worst thing that happened to me all of Christmas.
That doesn't sound too bad.
And Jen, we're going to save your travel plans because it's going to play into our second story here. But we begin with George Santos. Very rarely do we do back-to-back weeks on the same story, but this one is simply too good. That story that we brought to you last week about incoming Congressman George Santos and his maybe, possibly, totally fraudulent backstory, to catch you up, according to the New York Times, Santos did not work at Citigroup or Goldman Sachs, as his stated resume proclaimed. He did not graduate from Baruch College. Subsequent reporting by pure journalists feeding the truth to an impatient and undeserving group of podcasters like Jen Briney suggested and reported that the first openly gay non-incumbent to win congressional office also did not disclose his divorce from a woman. And on Monday, Santos came clean, kind of, in an interview with the New York Post. The incoming freshman congressman, at least for now, admitted to fabricating his work in education history. He admitted that he'd previously been married to a woman and said it was complicated. He even admitted to not being Jewish, something that had earned him a speaking spot at a recent Republican Jewish coalition convention. In response, the RJC said that Santos is not welcome at future events. One thing Santos did confirm is that he does plan on becoming a congressman in the new year. Quote, "I campaign talking about the people's concerns and not my resume. I intend to deliver on the promises I made during the campaign, fighting crime, fighting to lower inflation, improving education. The people elected me to fight for them." One man who believes he should step down is Robert Zimmerman, Santos's vanquished opponent last November. Quote, "George, if that is your real name, if you're so convinced that NY3 voters still trust you, resign and run against me in a special election. Face the voters with your real past and answer questions about your criminal history. Let the voters decide." Still up for debate, or at least further questioning, is exactly how George Santos was in business for 1 year and had millions of dollars fall into that business's lap. But this is what we know as of our recording. I begin with Jen Briney, our congressional watcher. Should Santos step down before he becomes a congressman on January 3rd?
I mean, if he wasn't totally shameless, which he clearly is, I think someone would want to step down just because you've been caught in a lie. But there's nothing in the House rules. There's nothing in the law. There's nothing that says you can't lie your way into Congress. So he doesn't have to.
Yeah.
But I maintain, Justin, that it is absolutely crazy that no one even bothered to look at his divorce records, his employment records, these journalists that you're so proud of. Like, how did no one look at this for the entire time he was running? I'm still stuck on that. I can't get over that. I just feel like the due diligence wasn't done by Zimmerman or any journalists, and like, this is what we get. We get shameless in Congress. So I'm hoping there's maybe some journalistic reckoning where people go, you know, maybe instead of just, you know, looking at polls, we should look into these people's records.
This is a fixation for you. This is a fixation for you on like, oh, everybody's looking at polls and stuff like that. But you didn't read the coverage through Newsweek. You didn't read the coverage, the local coverage there. You don't know if it was only obsessing about polls. It could have been obsessing about other stuff.
We know that there was two local journalists that did try to look into his background, but like the national media didn't pick that up. They picked up, there's two gays running against each other. Like, it's not just polls. It's just reporting on stupid shit and doing the easy things and not actually doing the research into this person. I'm just stunned that this was a race that actually was reported on nationally and no one bothered to check anything he said. Like, what exactly are we doing if we're not doing that? So I'm still like, the shameless guy got in. He got in. It is what it is. But the people that were supposed to be informing the public about who this man is, that's where I see the biggest failure. And I just, the more we find out, I'm like, it's so obvious that this could have been done before the election. Like, that's still what I'm fixated on, because if we don't learn lessons here, then more con artists can get in.
Yes. Yes. And he didn't get elected because he worked at Goldman Sachs. Now, he might have not gotten elected. That. He might have not gotten elected if he were revealed to be a liar.
I love the idea of a Long Island voter going, I don't know. On the one hand, I like Zimmerman's policy positions, but this other guy, he works for Goldman Sachs. That's my corporation. That's my favorite corporation, Goldman Sachs. Love Goldman Sachs. They always go to the games.
Well, we are talking about Republicans here. They do think that having a businessy resume, being very at the top like that, Goldman Sachs, Citibank, like they actually would kind of get hard-ons for, he's a great businessman. That means he's good in government.
Yes, you.
there are Republicans that love business people.
Jen Briney with her finger on the pulse of the Long Island electorate from Huntington to Syosset. She knows how the Strong Island votes.
Okay, it's not about the island. I'm talking about Republicans in general.
We're talking about one congressional district. That's my point. You can broaden it and make it another conversation if you want, but we're talking about one congressional district.
I'm talking about when you say, does the fake resume matter to the voters? Would it matter that he worked for Goldman Sachs and Citibank? I'm saying maybe it would. Maybe that lie was effectual for people that really think that business people are good in government.
Maybe. And the thing that you really should focus on is the Jewish part, because that does move votes. There is, especially in New York. New York is there are ethnic and tribal lines for which when you cover citywide elections, you are very much talking about tapping into very, very built up communities, and him lying about that heritage, I do think had probably more of a material impact than wherever he might have worked before. Everybody running for something in New York worked at some point with some kind of a Wall Street thing. So whether or not you believe that it was a material plus or minus, I don't think that it was particularly a man bites dog, but then again, a Jewish person running for office there doesn't either. Yeah, Heaton.
I demand, if George Santos sits in this Congress, that he converts to Judaism. He made the claim. He might have got elected on it. He has to convert, and he has to be circumcised.
Oh God.
I demand the sergeant at arms.
The sergeant at arms check him every time he enters the chamber to make sure he's circumcised and stays circumcised.
Oh, Congress would be more fun with Andrew Heaton in it, wouldn't it be?
Indeed.
It'd be a great week, wouldn't it?
Heaton, never lie on your resume. That's the old Cherokee lesson that Elizabeth Warren has brought to Congress. Do you believe that it should be applied to Santos?
you know, I'm not going to stick up for this guy because he does strike me as a shameless scumbag in terms of, and I far be it from me to fucking stick my neck out for some slimy politician. I'm not going to bother doing that. I'll say that the thing that actually most bothered me about him is not the exaggerations slash lies. It was that he got ordered by a court to pay a backlog of rent for a year and then forgot.
Yes.
Didn't say, I have financial hardship, I cannot pay the rent. Just literally claimed he forgot to pay the rent. I don't want somebody messing around with budgets that forgets to pay rent, just forgets to pay rent or lies about it. That's not the kind of mind that I want messing around with it. In terms of the exaggeration and the lies, I will play devil's advocate for a minute. If the threshold were, we don't allow people that embellished to the point of falsehood to get elected, we would have maybe 7 people in Congress. It would not be a very large institution. You brought up Elizabeth Warren, who claimed for years to be Native American. Elizabeth Warren is a white woman who had a single Native American ancestor 6 to 10 generations ago. That is to say that if you think I, Andrew Heaton, am a white man, I also have a Native American ancestor about that far back, but I've not been claiming to be a Native American my entire life. We're the same level, right? Hillary Clinton claimed to be named after Sir Edmund Hillary, even though he climbed Mount Everest, I think 3 years after she was born. She claimed to be shot at when she was in the State Department. Biden has lots of things. Trump has lots of things. It's all across the board. So in terms of to play devil's advocate here, I'm wondering what the qualitative difference is between Santos and other people. Santos is apparently doing this across the board and constantly in terms of his resume, ethnicity, and potentially sexuality. But I am curious as to where we go. Well, you can be 10% liar. We're okay with that. But 20% is the lie threshold that we're really uncomfortable with. Maybe that's the deal. Maybe we give you like one big lie per season. And if you exceed that, you've broke the budget.
I think the fact that he's so close to 100%, that's why
it was a lot
above and beyond.
It was a lot. Like I think last week, my joke was that we're going to find out in the next 7 days that he is on cunnilingus message boards on the internet, talking about bragging about his prowess, but like we're close. we got pretty close. Here's the argument for him not being sat from the Republican perspective is this. He lied a lot. That's a lot of money that came into a fairly shady organization. Millions of dollars came in to a fairly shady organization that has a very little paper trail. So if you are a Republican, even if you're Kevin McCarthy, even if you're dealing with this super thin majority that he still hasn't locked up his speakership on, do you want to be there when that shoe drops? Do you want to deal with this now? Or do you want to deal with this when all the factions dig their heels in for various different issues? And now you have to deal with a gigantic scandal that won't go away. So that would be the argument from the Republican side to not seat him. On the other side, to seat him, you would say, look, it's a House seat. He's going to have to start running again in 6 months. This is going to be something that will, you know, Zimmerman will obviously just reload and say, I'm going to run again in 2 years. This guy is an absolute liar. They're going to pounce on anything that comes out.
Zimmerman should do. Zimmerman should also start claiming to work for Goldman Sachs. He should just claim all.
He
the
should
things
claim
the
he
other
can
guy's
fly.
Done.
He should claim that he can. That he
I
can
have
bench
two
800.
Gay husbands. You've got one gay husband. I've got 3 gay husbands. I feel sorry for Zimmerman. I think Zimmerman. It's not going to happen. But I think Zimmerman's suggestion of having a special election is a decent one.
Sour grapes. Loser.
I'll add to this. This guy is a probably sociopath, utterly shameless. A guy that's been attracted to power and shouldn't be in Congress, et cetera, et cetera. From a governance perspective, I think he'll be at best ineffectual, at worst a nightmare. From an entertainment perspective, I think he's going to be fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
From just gawking and rubbernecking at Congress. Like, you can see these guys coming sometimes, right? Like, Jen, were you around when Aaron Schock was making waves? Were you covering Congress back then?
I wasn't, but I remember the name. What was his deal?
He was like the super hot, 28-year-old shirtless wonder that got elected to Congress and then, of course, ended up like getting in trouble and Me Too and all these. But he was kind of the congressional hunk back in the day. And you could see this is going to capsize any minute here. This isn't going to work. And there are characters like that where you're like, this guy is going to be a lot of fun. If Congress were a sitcom, this is the new wacky neighbor character they used to try to save the last season.
Yeah.
I want to rewind for just 1 second to that Zimmerman comment, because my same ire that I have for journalists, I have for Zimmerman. Like, talk about your job during running a campaign is to win that office. And he was served a layup. It was just like, all you have to do is go to the county clerk's office, check out his divorce records. And yo, that's the name of a chick. Like, it's not that hard. He didn't do his own due diligence. So I don't really trust Zimmerman that much with going into government and doing a great job where he did such a piss poor job of his basic duties as well. So for him to waltz in there and be like, you know, I'm the better candidate, it's like, are you? Like, I don't know, dude. Like, you lost the easiest election of all time.
Zimmerman raised over $3 million to not do research. $3 million so he could not find out that dude's resume was the talented Mr. Ripley.
Yeah.
Once again, the American people are presented with a choice of a feckless liar or an incompetent dupe. Here you go, America. Take your pick.
Well, it's not America. It's a Strong Island and parts of Queens. So there we go.
Hold on, wait. Oh my God, I hate that I'm being the guy that's playing devil's advocate for the Santos character.
I love him now. I love the fact that he lied so insanely wins, and then when he gets called on it, he just does this Royal Tannenbaum chuckle and goes, "Poor buddy's nerfed. Anyway, I'm a congressman now."
I'm going to pretend to be his attorney for a second, okay? This is me play acting in the role of the Santos attorney. All right, yes, he was married to a woman. A lot of people are working out where they are sexually. A lot of people have repression and baggage from their background and their community. This is apparently what Santos did. He's married now to a man. He was his fiance for a while. There's lots of social media coverage on that. I believe they are now married. That's been legal and everything like that. He claimed to have worked for Goldman Sachs. He worked for a company that did work with Goldman Sachs. So yes, he didn't work for it, but it wasn't a complete whole cloth fabrication. It was an exaggeration. End my role as attorney.
And that's effectively what he said. He said that he made capital introductions for many big players. Two of the biggest were Goldman Sachs and Citigroup. And that was why he listed that. I just think, boy, are there still a lot of questions. That's millions and millions of dollars came into his let me introduce you to people organization. And that's all you did. And the business was only around for a year.
But wasn't he just kind of a loser prior to that? Like, there's no reason that you'd like, he's living with his sister. He's failed to pay rent.
He's
at
a call center. He's working as a call center operator, and he goes delinquent on his rent to the tune of like $12,000. And then, as Heaton pointed out, he was when he was asked by the Post if he paid it, he's like, no, why not? I forgot. I'm dealing with,
you know,
a
what?
Lot.
Okay. I take everything I said back. George Santos should be in the American government, and he should be in charge of coordinating our debt with other countries. Whenever like China goes, hey, wait a minute, don't you guys owe us like $15 trillion? We just ship over George Santos, who butters them up and is like, don't worry, guys, the check is in the mail. Now, because of supply chain issues, it's been real tough for the states, but we're going to get it to you. It's a funny story. You're going to love this, right? He should be the guy in charge of that.
Justin, I have a question.
Yeah.
Is it, I mean, it has to be, I don't know though, is it illegal, like, for campaign finance laws for a billionaire to give some schmuck, like, I don't know, $700,000, and then that person uses it in their own campaign? Like, is that allowed? Like, can you gift someone $700,000?
I don't think that would be legal.
Well, it doesn't sound like it would be.
There are different ways you can do it. I mean, like, if I wanted to run for president And I had a friend who happened to be a billionaire, and they were very, very, very excited to give me as much money as they wanted. There are ways you can fund it. There, the only difference is how much you're giving to the campaign itself versus how much you are giving to an outside political action committee that is supporting your campaign.
You just form a political action committee called Strong Island Gays for Reduced Crime,
basically,
or whatever the thing is Goldman Sachs Jews that hate Zimmerman or whatever, and you create the pack, and then technically they're an independent organization. They're not run by Zimmerman. You can put as much money in there as you want.
Here's where it gets interesting. You are not allowed to communicate at all between privately communicate at all between a PAC and a campaign. But the question then becomes, what's public? And we don't really have a whole lot of court decisions on this. And this cycle in 2022, a political action committee that was supporting J.D. Vance in Ohio was found to be communicating on publicly available message boards, but through unlisted accounts. So you could, if you knew the exact URL, go to that account and you could see them talking to each other. But nobody knew that URL except for the campaign and for the political action committee. It was technically public. You didn't need a password to get to it, but it is factually obscured enough. It is as secret as if you were to go to Google Docs and say, share, anyone with a link can access. That's effectively what was public communication, and I'm using air quotes there. So there's a way you can get money to anybody that you need to. But in this scenario, the issue was Zimmerman paid himself. We don't know where the money came in from the DeVolder company. That is how he made his cash. It is very interesting that only a few years ago, he was a deadbeat. he was a deadbeat tenant.
Put him in charge of debt relief. We need Santos. He's going to be great.
Patreon.com/We're Not Wrong. That's where you go if you'd like to give us money or, you know, suggested donations. We don't really have a line right now for how much it's going to cost to get the exclusive episodes. But what I would suggest is that you pay us one penny for every at reply I got to that Taylor Lorenz tweet. That just one penny for every at reply. That's what we are asking you for. But you get something for your money, because at patreon.com/we're not wrong, you get a custom RSS feed. You put it in the podcatcher of your choice. You never got to sign into it ever again. And when we release these episodes, you don't just get one episode. You get a bonus topic on top of that. This week's bonus topic, we're going to be talking about weed. I want to make Andrew Heaton the weed czar of America, because we have a real supply and demand problem. There are some very interesting.
We don't have a supply and demand problem at all. We have a really functional supply and demand. I apologize for jumping ahead, but as weeds are, I think you're going to be disappointed with my lack of effort.
You're really selling the Patreon here, Heaton.
Oh, no, it's going to be a good segment. Yes. I'm just telling you, the whole idea that we have some sort of problem because weed is too inexpensive belies people thinking that the government needs to make things cost more. I, as weeds are, am not going to make things cost more. I'm going to make things cost less.
I feel like you're about to get yourself appointed right now with that kind of talk. Patreon.com/we're not wrong. Cheap weed, says Andy Heats. Spark them up. Let's talk about Southwest. Want to get away? Too bad. Southwest has emerged as the poster boy for flight cancellations after the U.S. was rocked by heavy snow and freezing temperatures over the Christmas holiday. The largest domestic airline canceled 70% of its flight on Tuesday, matching similar figures throughout the weekend, straining thousands of passengers post-Christmas. The airline says that they were staffed appropriately for the traffic, but weather conspired to strand crews and planes in cities they shouldn't be. Southwest is specifically vulnerable to this problem because they don't use a hub and spoke system where the vast majority of their flights come through a few cities, like Delta does in Atlanta, United does in Chicago and American does in Dallas. Instead, they run their planes on a route like a bus or a train going from one city to another. And that's how they move their people. Now, a little birdie in the aviation industry told We're Not Wrong that Southwest knew in advance that they were very vulnerable to these weather delays and could have mitigated it by paying reserve pilots and crew to fly to cities just in case a scenario like this happened. Southwest declined and it came up snake eyes. Two Democratic senators said on Tuesday that Southwest is failing consumers and called on the carrier to compensate passengers with rebooked or refunded tickets, hotel and meal reimbursements, and significant monetary compensation for the disruption to their holiday plans, says Ed Markey and Richard Blumenthal, D Mass and D Connecticut, respectively. Southwest cannot avoid compensating passengers by claiming these flight cancellations were caused by the recent winter storms. The Department of Transportation said it would review Southwest's actions and customer service policies that contributed to a rough holiday travel weekend. The agent says it was concerned by Southwest's unacceptable rate of cancellations and delays and the reports of a lack of prompt customer service and will examine whether cancellations were controllable and if Southwest is complying with its customer service plan. Heaton, does the government need to step in here?
Were there any safety issues?
I mean,
were there any issues of fraud?
You can make the argument that stranding people in cities that they are not expected to be in with medications and stuff like that. You're bordering on negligence that leads to safety.
Short answer, no. The government doesn't exist to analyze and assess incompetency in the private sector. Or more to the point, the government doesn't exist to help people when they're very mad with somebody that they're doing business with. If there were safety issues here where Southwest had been like, you know what, you fly a plane better when you've had a couple, don't worry. As long as you take some breath mints, you can fly that plane drunk. Then yes, at that point, when we're talking about public safety issues, or we're talking about fraud, or we're talking about something that directly relates to the purview of government, of course the government should step in. I don't see this being one of those cases. I see this being a case where a business made missteps and incompetently responded to a situation, and people are very angry about that. They are completely in their right to be angry about that. But this is a situation where that anger is going to affect that market, and it'll kind of take care of itself. People are going to be less apt to fly Southwest if they've been screwed over by it. Excuse me. They'll use other airlines. Conversely, the government investigating the missteps and how they did poorly and then trying to strong arm them, I don't see that being the role of the government. And more to the point, I don't think Congress has any business trying to tell other organizations how to be competent. The board of directors of Southwest is far more competent at whatever they're attempting to do than Congress is at its stated goals. Congress doesn't have a leg to stand on when it comes to analyzing or trying to enforce competency in business outside of the private sector. So no, I get that people are mad. It sucks. I don't like airlines either. It pisses me off that if I show up 5 minutes late, I have to pay an airfare difference. But if they show up 3 hours late, I'm screwed. I totally get why people are irritated, particularly if you got stranded in some city. But I don't think that it merits congressional intervention.
Jen, congressional intervention certainly is warranted when they need money for a bailout. So why don't they need the stick when they misbehave?
I'm actually with Andrew on this one. If they were misbehaving in a way that was jeopardizing safety, I think this would be a different conversation. I mean, I've been very supportive of investigations. For example, one that is going away because the Republicans don't care, but there was an investigation done into the safety of dog and cat collars that have been killing dogs and cats. And like, I feel like that's a safety issue. Therefore, congressional investigations make a lot of sense. What I'm seeing with Southwest, as I have so much bias in this one because I love Southwest, and they might cancel my flight tomorrow. So they could be affecting my flights too.
Yeah, there's that. Jen is actually flying Southwest tomorrow, allegedly.
Yeah. And I've gotten an email where it's like, you may or may not be flying tomorrow and we will just deal with it when it happens. I feel like them being willing to have to, I mean, it's between Christmas and New Year's right now, and they are saying that they're going to fly a third of their schedule in order to get their crews and pilots where they need to be. The fact that they were kind of willing to let this catastrophe happen in their company tells me that they're not telling their pilots to fly longer than they're supposed to, and they're not telling their flight attendants to fly longer than they're supposed to. They're dealing with the fallout of a system that they clearly have some lessons to learn. But the fact that they don't have a hub and spoke is why when things are normal, I feel like Southwest is the best airline to fly because they have more flexibility than others. They're able to move their planes around. And I always feel confident that when I get on a Southwest plane, they're going to get me to where I need to go because they always have. They've held planes for me before. So I love this airline. They've always done right by me. To the point that, like, I was counseling my friends that I'm meeting tomorrow here in, or no, today, today in Palm Springs. Their flight was canceled. They were coming from Oakland down to Palm Springs. Their flight was canceled. And I told them, just book whatever you can because Southwest will make it right. And I do know that that's kind of what the congressmen are looking at. They just want to make sure that the people are going to get refunded and that there's going to be some kind of compensation. I also feel quite confident in that because I got delayed less than 2 weeks ago and it was just a delay. I was late by like 3 hours and Southwest gave me $150 credit towards a future flight that I didn't even ask for. So I feel like Southwest is going to make it right, but there are new laws that were passed. It was either in the transportation bill or in one before that. I can't remember exactly what it was. But we do now have essentially a passenger's bill of rights where if you don't get where you need to go or if you're on the tarmac for too long, they have to let you off the plane. There are rules now. So I feel like Congress, if they're just investigating to make sure that these rules are being followed, I'm okay with it just because these are relatively new laws and just to make sure that these customers are getting compensated as they should. But insofar as, like, you know, there were delays and cancellations, like Andrew said, there's people that, I mean, it's going to work for me. Maybe the ticket prices will go down, but there are going to be people that are like, you know, fuck Southwest. I'm never flying them again. And that's kind of the market taking care of it. If that's what people are angry about.
Who are you? Free market Jennifer Briney? What is happening right now? You just love Southwest so much.
No, I don't believe in the free market. I don't think that's real, but this is a regulated market and there are ways that the market's going to take care of this. But also, like I said, there are rules. There are rules about you have to refund someone if their plane doesn't take off. And so if they're just making sure that those regulations are followed, I'm fine by that. But like, this is not something that I think really put people in danger. I don't really buy the idea that getting stuck in an airport for a night is going to put you in danger. Like, you'll be fine.
It wasn't overnight for some people. For some people, it was days. I mean, they were saying
that Southwest was putting people up in hotels. I mean, what else can they do?
Yeah, I don't know.
Think about this in other situations. You buy a car. I don't know. Toyota makes a lemon and it just doesn't start. It's not a safety issue. It just doesn't start. It's a really crappy car. Like, okay, that really sucks. That sucks. Sometimes businesses fuck up. And if they're not fucking up in a way that has negative externalities for society as a whole, or safety issues, or is willful malfeasance and committing fraud or something like that, then that stinks. And the government getting involved to try to alleviate the feelings you have regarding that incompetency just isn't something that the government's well suited to do.
And one of the reasons that this became such a huge deal is because it's Christmas and they all want to have that, you know, the end of the story where you get home in time for Christmas and people weren't able to get that. If this had happened in the beginning of December, people would just cancel their plans. So I do think that the fact that it happened
over the summer, they had all these problems during the summer too, with a bunch of their crews and pilots not showing up. Like they had a bad
Justin,
year.
I'm gonna put this on you, Justin. Yeah. As airplane czar for the United States, you get elected in a special election to replace Santos and Zimmerman, yeah. And you're put on the subcommittee for plane flights and peanuts. Do you do as Congress, Justin, to fix this problem and make the airlines just whistle quick?
I don't think that we are talking about solving the problem particularly, but in this scenario, for an industry that does regularly ask for and receive bailouts, at the very least, at least in the scenario that was described to me, Southwest made a business decision to not possibly spend money on pilots and crew that weren't going to do anything in case this winter storm was as bad as it could be. They decided to just roll the dice and say, whatever happens, we'll just deal with it. This was among the worst case scenarios that could have happened. So yes, they rolled a one that is on some level bad luck. But at the same time, you should, I have no problem at the very least having a bunch of grandstanding congressmen yell at them for a couple weeks and have them explain exactly the scenario for which they made these decisions and whether or not they believe those were, now in hindsight, correct or incorrect decisions. The way that it was described to me, this was a cost saving thing for them that left thousands of people stranded for days. And while we can roll our eyes and say, oh, you know, I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dreams, like, I do think that that matters. And that is something that at the very least should earn you an annoying trip to Washington, so a bunch of people can try to dunk on you for Twitter likes.
No, I think that if you want to have Washington involved, this is what it should do. Quit giving bailouts to airlines. The idea, which is there's a rational argument to be made here, that if the government is bailing out industries, the government should have a say in how they're run. I don't disagree with that. So quit bailing them out. If there are problems here, there are enough people that want to fly planes that they're going to have to raise prices, and it'll be an adjustment. But I would rather get the government out of trying to run that market or nudge that market. I want the government on the edges, stopping fraud and safety issues. That's what I want. I don't want it sitting at the board of directors making decisions, trying to steer the economy. And insofar as they rolled a one and people had a really, really crap travel plan, don't disagree. But then the idea that Congress acts as some sort of emotional catharsis for the American people, bullshit. Congress isn't there for emotional purposes. It's not there as our dad. It's not there as some sort of super entity that makes the world spiritually right. It is an appendage of society's body, like a spleen that has very specific duties. And this isn't one of them.
No, but no, let me make the business argument again. The fact that they made a decision believing that they could survive anything that might go wrong, the next time they're in a scenario like that, where they're having to make a decision, maybe they think differently if this is as loud and embarrassing as it possibly could be. And Congress plays a role there.
Well, and that's where I feel like the business, like, they're taking such a huge reputational hit, and the amount of money they're going to have to pay out to these people that were affected. I think that they realize that that's a bad business decision. But I also want to go back to these bailouts that we're talking about. We also have to keep in mind why the last bailout happened, which, by the way, most of it went to Boeing. It wasn't Southwest. Southwest is actually the only profitable airline. They do fine financially. But like, the reason that we had those bailouts was COVID. And Southwest has been saying this entire time, we're having trouble staffing up after COVID. All of us wanted to fly, and they still haven't been able to get enough staffing. So we're still in the aftermath of COVID. And I think all of us need to take a beat, because we know that restaurants are having trouble being staffed. We know retail's having trouble being staffed. This is a real thing. And I think we still need to remember that we're in the aftermath of something extraordinary. And that is exactly what Southwest said is happening here. They weren't able to get enough people to run these planes where they needed to be. Now, Justin, I know that you say you have a source. You won't tell us who it is, so I don't know if we can count that as a fact at this point. But Southwest is telling us it's a staffing thing.
Yes.
And this is a post-COVID thing. So I think we just need to kind of understand that. And if you don't want to fly Southwest, don't. I still trust them.
Southwest lobbyist, don't. Jen Briney. You can go to K Street.
They've always done right by me.
You can go to K Street.
They've always, you know how much, like, I am constantly accused of being a corporation hater, and Southwest has always done right by me.
Except for this one. Interesting.
I love this one. I genuinely do. They've never paid me.
Yeah.
I don't take ads from them. You know that's true. I love them. I think it's a great airline, and I think they will make everyone whole when they get a chance.
Jen is completely right. Like, I think a corollary to this, I have very, very strong thoughts on car rentals when I travel. I have had some really bad experiences renting cars at various airports. I know no one else has ever had a bad car rental experience.
I'm curious. I've not had a ton of really bad car rental experiences. I've rented a billion cars.
I had one where I backed up in a parking lot. And like nudged a bumper, did not dent the bumper, just like literally like smudged it. And when I took it back to this particular car rental company, they went, oh, that's too bad, man. We're going to have to replace the bumper and chassis and everything else. And ended up doing like $8,000 worth of work on what was a cosmetic thing. And their attitude was, your credit card company will take care of it, which ultimately did happen. But I was literally preparing to like fly back to Los Angeles to go to small claims court to be like, this is bullshit. And it was just an insurance thing where they're like, wait. But my point is, in a situation like that, I can go, all right, I'm not going to rent a car from that company again. I'm going to rent a car from another group. And that tends to be what happens with consumers. Is you get pissed off by a company, you don't use that company anymore. That forces the company to course correct if they do it too much. And it just takes care of itself. The market solves the problem.
That's a really good example, though, because there's a governmental investigation happening right now into Hertz for overcharging people on such a systematic basis that the government has to get involved. So at some point, and also keep in mind that we really only have 3 rental car companies in the United States. It looks like we have more than we actually do. And so there's anti-monopoly issues. There are fraud issues. Like, so in this case, when it comes to car rentals, oh, and they're giving out cars to people that weren't safe. And that was a big part of this investigation too. And it's just beginning, which is why I know nothing about it. But, in that case, I think that's different. That's not an inconvenience. That is defrauding people, and that is a safety issue. And that's where I do want the government to get involved.
Me too.
So it depends.
If companies are overcharging, they're charging people beyond what is the stated amount in the bill, and they are committing sort of petty acts of fraud, or they're putting vehicles on the road that are unsafe. Those are situations where contract law is being violated or public safety is at issue. And that's a legitimate role for government to step in.
Exactly.
Conversely, if there weren't enough red cars and people were angry that there weren't sufficient red cars, or there just weren't enough cars because they screwed up the supply chain, and so you ended up waiting or you didn't get your, that kind of stuff, what could be put into the category of irritations or inconveniences, that sucks. But it is something that's fairly endemic to life. And endemic to both government and the private sector. And so, Justin, that's what I don't want the government messing around with.
But I think also, like, looking at what the congressmen are saying, I think that they are just looking to make sure that Southwest isn't canceling all these flights and pocketing the money. So doing that, you know, just checking, I'm not against that either. Because it's kind of the same thing.
I think that that is entirely possible. However, I am much more of a cynic when it comes to congressional grandstanding. I think there are members of Congress that know that there are a bunch of angry people. And so if they get out in front of them with a bullhorn and make a lot of noise, they'll get a lot of applause. Well, and that's the extent of what's going on.
Yeah,
that's Congress. I think
good in this case. Good in this case. Suffer that fate. Jen, do you have a travel hell story that you want to share with us?
I do, but it was kind of my own fault.
What happened?
I can't blame the airline for this one. I used to live quite literally on the LAX runway. Like, my view was of the planes taking off and landing. And, so we were going to Butte, Montana, which has 2 flights in per day. And what we used to do, and I still do this, I show up a half hour before boarding. And so what Joe and I decided to do is we were going to have 1 drink before we go to the airport. And then, you know, go along our way. But our flight kept getting delayed by an hour. So every time that happened, we'd have another drink. Mm. And 8 hours later, we are smashed. And then we went to the airport where we got delayed again. So by the time we get on the plane, I'm completely hungover. And I was like so sick, like throwing up level sick. And then we got to Seattle because we had to transfer there to go to Butte. And our plane was long gone. And so we ended up staying in this trash hotel. We got there at like 4 in the morning because it was all that Alaska would pay for. And it was the worst hotel of all time. The bed was basically a brick. And they made us check out at 11, even though our flight wasn't until like 8 p.m. It was something insane. So we were basically stranded in Seattle. And I remember Joe and I somehow ended up at the Space Needle, like yelling at each other because we were so hungover and tired. I don't even know what we were fighting about. We were just yelling at each other. It was awful. And then we finally got on that plane to Butte. We arrived 24 hours later. And I don't think it would have been as miserable if I didn't decide to be a booze monster.
Yeah.
drink my way through the delay. But that was the worst one. And I think the worst part of it was they put us in that trash hotel and then didn't arrange for a late checkout or anything. So we were just stranded for almost an entire day. Like, that was infuriating.
A buddy of mine, Brett, once got stranded in Cleveland during a snowstorm for a week. And he invented the concept of trunk pizza. It's a beautiful thing, especially this time of year. Buy two pizzas if you are in below freezing temperature. You just throw both them some bitches in your trunk and just leave them there. Whenever you want pizza, when you're on the road, pop the trunk. It's sitting there for you. Cold pizza on demand in your trunk. Set it and forget it.
I like it.
I hope Brett wins a Nobel Prize. That is something to demonstrably celebrate. I've got kind of a irritating / funny travel story. Maybe I've brought this up on the show. I apologize, listeners, if I'm repeating myself. But when I was right out of college and I was backpacking through Europe, I took a train from the German part of Switzerland down to Milan, which was hilarious because I'm on this train and you hear over the speaker system, passengers, we apologize. We apologize. The train is arriving 6 minutes ahead of schedule. And I was like, what? You're apologizing for, but the German speakers were like, oh no, we were supposed to get there at 4:30, but we got there at 4:24. We lied to them. So they apologized. Then I'm in Italy. I'm in Milan. I'm trying to take a train from Milan to Venice. The fucking conductors walk up 3.5 hours late. One of them has a bottle of wine. They've clearly just been jacking around at lunch. We get on this train late. We start going. It's oversold. So I have to stand in the vestibule with a bunch of fat guys and some prostitutes. And I'm just sweltering. There's no air conditioning. We're going across Italy. Then it just stops in the middle of nowhere, stops for 2 hours. And I finally grab a conductor and I'm like, hey, I'm really sorry to bother you. I'm just curious as to what's going on right here. And he goes, oh, the train had made a wrong turn. And I was like, what? It's on a fucking track. I could drive the train. How do you get a train lost? And I thought, man, next time Germany invades this peninsula, I'm not lifting a finger.
Wow.
Just going to let that one sit. To be fair to those conductors, have you ever tried to get your check at a restaurant in Italy? Fucking damn near impossible.
Yeah, you're right. It could have been the wait staff's problem and not the transportation. You're right. I need to put blame where blame is due.
All right. We're not wrong pod at gmail.com. We're not wrong pod at gmail.com. Write it in lights. In a starless sky, we're not wrong pod at gmail.com. Why are you protecting the FBI, writes? If a high-level FBI agent walks into your office and suggests something after spending millions of tax dollars to influence your organization, even going as far as suggesting the hiring of a former agency lawyer, there's a level of influence that can't be ignored. I worked in government for 20 years, and in government service, we had a code. There's mandatory and highly recommended. You'll get paperwork that'll stunt your career if you don't comply with a mandatory action. You'll just gain a stigma that'll kill your career if you don't comply with a highly encouraged action. I don't care how much of a Boy Scout these agents are. If they get a suggestion from the agency, they're going to do everything in their power to influence the company to take that action. Now, I don't remember us being particularly friendly to the FBI in our segment to warrant such anger, but I'm here to reiterate the point I think we made last week. We thought that the FBI had undue influence on Twitter and that soft influence did indeed create concrete results. So I don't know. Did anybody else want to re-clarify or I didn't really know where this was coming from.
I don't know where this is coming from either. This just reiterates to me that, like, you can say whatever you think and people are going to hear whatever they want to hear. Cause I don't know where that came from.
Yeah.
I don't think we're pro FBI.
No, I think we pointed out exactly what they said but when you,
I was in the room with Justin, and when we wrapped up, he sort of like ducked his head down into his shoulder and spoke into his collar and said, was that okay? Did I say it right? Is that exactly what you guys wanted? And I don't know what that meant, but it made me feel uncomfortable.
Why Bother writes, regardless of the merits, the referral from the January 6th commission isn't worth the paper it's printed on. DOJ is under no obligation to follow it. I think that there's a colorable argument that it actually makes prosecuting Trump less appealing because now it looks more partisan.
Well, that's just ridiculous because I'm watching these January 6th hearings and Liz Cheney is one of the people that is taking the lead. You can't really call her a Democrat. The Can vast majority, though. No, you really can't. She's Dick Cheney's daughter, for Christ's sake.
She seems really popular with Democrats these days.
Well, you know, that's just, she did the right thing in this case. And most of the witnesses are Republicans. This wasn't a partisan thing. It was actually quite refreshing how nonpartisan these hearings were. But it's definitely partisan to dismiss the whole thing as partisan. When a president tried to stay president, you're just like, oh, that's just the Democrats being Democrats. Like, shut up. The Justice Department can take all of the evidence that has been collected for them and do something with it if they want. Like, obviously, our legal system doesn't have Congress make anything happen, but having that referral, it's not worthless. So in these hearings, we're not worthless. And it's very partisan to just be like, oh, this is just a Democratic witch hunt. Like, you clearly didn't pay attention to them, if that's what you think.
Heaton.
I don't disagree that it is a legitimate issue of state and a threat to democracy, et cetera, et cetera. I do take the point that prosecutors need to be very careful for not appearing to be political. That is a thing that is a consideration worth having. There are lots of people that look at, say, the raid on Mar-a-Lago and see that as the law being applied only to Republicans, but not being applied to similar infractions with Democrats. And when we get into the high stakes situations like this, if we can deal with these matters without making people think it's political, that would be best. So I see where the person's coming from. But all that being said, if I were on the committee, I would have recommended criminalization. And if I were in the DOJ, I'd be giving it serious thought.
Jen, what if I replace the word partisan with anti-Trump? Because it was Democrats who were very critical of Trump and never Trump Republicans who have been very, very critical of Trump.
I don't care if it's anti-Trump. They should be anti-Trump. He tried to stay president even though he lost. So if it's anti-Trump to say that this guy did possibly criminal things, and now that I know the details, pretty sure he did. Okay, fine. Like, I don't know why. I don't understand why the entire investigation should be dismissed, especially by the Justice Department, because people don't like Trump. You have reasons to not like Trump, and he gave you quite a few after he lost that election. So, like, I don't. No, I don't understand the dismissing of this entire thing. I'm in the middle of the hearings and like just getting into the weeds in the way that I am. Like I didn't realize the details. I didn't realize how coordinated this was. And this is not a partisan wish hunt. And I'll be the first to say when it is. Yes.
Coordinated.
Actually. Yeah. There's this dude named John Eastman, which I also don't understand why this is the first time that I'm like really hearing this
Eastman
name.
Memo?
Yeah.
The Eastman
memo. Not just a memo.
But also the way that he interacted with people behind the scenes. It's been out forever.
Yeah. And it's just like, that's one thing after another, and Trump's on these calls and Eastman's on these calls. Like they really tried. The fake elector scheme is stunning to me. And I know that there's information out there about it, but I haven't been exposed to it that much. I just feel like there's a lot of people dismissing this. It's not a topic of conversation in the way that I feel like it should be. Just watching the details of this, I'm stunned. I can't wait to release my episode where I'm just putting this out there because they didn't need to do this in 10 hearings. I think it would have been well served.
Well, we are dead in agreement when it comes to that. I think that they didn't need to make this the mini series that they made it into. I think that was particularly self-serving, and I think it worked against their point.
Yeah. And I feel like once I can narrow that, I'm hoping to get it under 2 hours and just play you the relevant clips. But I think when you experience what I'm experiencing, which is just hearing this stuff like bang, 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 like I'm taking the four charges that they submitted to the Justice Department, kind of dismissing the insurrection one because we did that in the botched impeachment, like whatever. But the other ones, pressuring Mike Pence, the fake electors, all that stuff. I think when you hear the evidence just back to back, the way I'm going to present it, it's overwhelming. It really is. And it's infuriating. And I think it matters.
Meh. Heaton is right about sports.
You've been meh about it the whole time, dude.
I have, yeah. And then there was nothing that there's nothing that I saw or read when they were putting it out there that really made me change my opinion.
Justin, does it change your mind knowing that some of these fake electors used corporate airlines? Now are you fired up?
No, I mean, like, all right. Look, I'm sure that we'll do a whole larger thing, you know, when your stuff is out, and we can talk about it then. But the executive summary is that I thought everything was fucked up at the time that it was happening. I have not changed my opinion that I thought it was fucked up. The question is whether or not it was criminal. I don't think further proving the depths for which this Apple dumpling gang of fuckwits went about going through their motions particularly colors me one way or another. For some, it might. That's up to everybody. But look, make your recommendations, prosecute them if you can. I think that this is really about trying to make Donald Trump ineligible to run for president. And if it was just called the Let's Make Donald Trump Ineligible to Run for President Commission, then I think it at least would have been honest. Instead, it did not focus fully on the January 6th issue, which to me, I do think, I know, Jen, that you want to hand wave what happened on January 6th, but I do think that the bombs that were planted at the DNC and the RNC were something that should have been looked into. I do think that some of the understanding of the lack of chain of command with the intelligence committees and the police forces should have been brought more into the fore. Yes, making Donald Trump ineligible for president is a part of this, and detailing the reasons why he should never do it is a part of it. I don't think it should have been the whole thing. I was disappointed that it was the whole thing. That's my point.
And my disappointment is that they called it the January 6th committee as if the riot is the big story here.
Because you don't get that unless that's the hook. The visuals of the riot are the reason why people cared. And so, again, call it the Donald Trump should never be president committee. And we're going to make the case of why Donald Trump should never be president. Then that's at least that would have been dead on to their goals and what they were trying to do.
I mean, I feel like this whole exercise should have been the impeachment. This should have been the investigation for the impeachment that happens after. The fact that they impeach first and did the investigation second is psychotic to me, but that's what the Democrats decided to do. Because you're absolutely right. After this, Donald Trump should never be president again. It is what they were proving. But the way that you make sure of that is you use the impeachment process that we have, and the Democrats did everything backwards. So I do think that the end of this being a referral to the Justice Department is not how it should be. He should be impeached for this, but they already did it and botched it. So I'm with you on that, but the Justice Department referral, I guess, is the best that they can do. But to say that that piece of paper is worthless is
clearly written by someone that
doesn't watch these hearings.
I don't think that it's necessary to create a bifurcation between motivations and say either they are being motivated for the preservation of democracy and prosecuting an insurrection, or they are politically motivated because they want to win elections. Most of the time with politicians, there is both self-interest and, at best, something that's public interest working in tandem with one another. An exercise that I do in the political media arena regularly is what I call the partisan hack test, where you look at a pundit and you say, if this pundit were trying to be a partisan hack, what would they be doing different than what they currently do? And if you can't think of anything, they are a partisan hack. You could apply the same logic to the January 6th commission and say, all right, if these people were completely not political, they didn't care at all, they were only concerned with the governance of the nation and the maintenance of the state, what would they do differently? I think it'd kind of be the same, probably just shorter. I just think the length would have been altered, but I think it still would have happened. Yeah.
Liz Cheney gave up her political career for this. She lost her leadership position.
She didn't run. She didn't functionally run a campaign. And I will stand by that until the day I died. The fact that she goes to Wyoming voters and talks about January 6th is willfully trying to leave Congress.
Dude, she didn't have to participate in this. She did. She, by all accounts, devoted herself to it. Watching this woman, it seemed like she actually cared, as she should. This isn't like, I don't know, Adam Kinzinger was all in. Like, this was bigger than their parties, and they treated it as such. So I don't know.
Heaton is right about sports, writes, why would you watch a team that sucks just because it's quote unquote your team? I don't really get people who make their team into a personality, follow all the stats and join fantasy leagues. I work with people who watch NFL commentary on TV and I can't stand it. Watching old men debate and make predictions about football games is worse to me than Rush Limbaugh reruns and The View combined.
Okay, joyless. Like, have no fun. That's all it is brother. It's fun. My God.
Preach, brother. I literally do think there's some part of my brain missing. Like, I don't like, I think that there's this, oh my God, I'm going to sound so like an alien visitor here. There's this wonderful part of the human experience that is group euphoria, and you can get it through basically sports, religion, or singing. And I only have one of those things I could do. That's one of the reasons I like karaoke so much. And Christmas caroling. I've done Christmas caroling at least three times. I go to that gay bar in New York where I can sing show tunes. Because I can't get that group euphoria from sports. It's always like, but I can see it around people. I can see the joy that they're experiencing. I wish I had it. I just don't.
Well, I mean, there's different ways to get it. Like, do you watch American Idol or anything like that? Like, do you have something to cheer for? Because that's what we want, is just something to cheer for.
Not really.
Heaton cheers against corn subsidies.
Yeah. I don't know. I wonder, Jen, I wonder if this is something innate to me, like could be that I'm on the cusp of Asperger's or something, and that there's some element that I don't have. The other possibility is, I think because I'm ethnically Republican and I left the Republican Party and went, okay, I'm never again am I putting all of my faith in a political group. I used to be super religious. I debated joining the priesthood. I used to hang out at monasteries, and then I left and became an apostate and an agnostic and went, all right, never again am I putting all of my moral beliefs in this one basket. I think I have like group baggage now, where I'm very, very, very hesitant to ever tether my identity to a group.
Well, I think one of the reasons that it's fun to put that into sports is that you get that thing to cheer for in a way that it really doesn't matter. Like religion and politics, treating those as sports and like rooting for a team, I think that can be really detrimental to society and the individual. But sports, I mean, it's harmless and it's fun. And yeah, like to get a rush because of something that, you know, you had no control over.
This,
but
again, this, the fun. Second they make, the second they make a sports pill, I'm going to take it. And we're going to have a great time.
Oh, there's but a pill, my friend. And we're going to give it to you in Vegas. It's when called, we make you bet on
gambling
things.
Straight up.
I'm looking forward
to gambling. I want you to say,
because
no, I know that this is going to be a thing. So we're going to Heaton, and in your budget, your meticulously kept budget, I just need you to start putting away $25, whatever cycle you have of money, that just put 25 away that you know is going into your football gambling fund, because we are going to go gamble on football when we go to Vegas together.
All right. Okay. I look forward to that.
Is Elon the baddie, right? My question is that by revealing the Twitter files by a foreign national who has in the past claimed that he would coup anyone he wants, and providing his current location, aka assassination coordinates, while trying to shake down sheiks from the Persian Gulf at the World Cup final for even more money into this dumpster fire of a media platform, isn't all that far worse than what the American citizen and veteran Edward Snowden did. Did Elon Musk get asked to reveal Twitter's involvement with disseminating propaganda as part of an agreement for $1.5 billion from Bin Tawal Alawid and hundreds of millions from Qatari investors?
I don't know the ins and outs of Elon Musk, but I will say with Snowden, I think that guy got a really, really bad hand. Snowden whistle blew on illegal programs going on in the United States. His loyalty, as should be every single member of government or employee of government, should be to the United States Constitution. There were programs that were in violation of that, and he revealed them. So I don't think that Snowden is a villain. I think he did the right thing and is unfortunately had to go into exile for it. Unfortunately, I can't comment on the Saudi connection and whatnot with Musk, because I'm unfamiliar with that. I'm not seeing the comparison.
There were receipts on this email, but the Musk has raised money from the Saudi Wealth Fund, as has a lot of people. Let me make clear, the Saudi Wealth Fund has diversified from oil, specifically under the new crown prince, Mohammed bin Salman, to fund a lot of things, specifically in America.
Yeah, I with Musk, the biggest issue that I've heard with Musk that makes me tilt my head to the side is that a lot of his success just comes from government contracts. And that is the thing that gives me pause about him. But overall, though, I'd say massive net positive for society. The amount of good that's happened in terms of space industry and aeronautics that's come as a result of SpaceX is phenomenal. And so he's still in the green for me.
I consider Edward Snowden a hero. The idea that we're even comparing him to Elon Musk is just silly to me. Like, Elon Musk is exposing stuff that the previous owners of the company he just bought did. I don't think it's on the same level. I don't know. It's
well, you know, he's yeah. The
how many space rockets has Edward Snowden released?
Yeah, the emailer was making the point that this should be looked at suspiciously as possible agitprop for the paymasters of Elon's current ventures, and is using as an example him going out and asking for more money at the World Cup final in Qatar and blah blah blah.
What was the bit about providing coordinates? Is the idea that Musk is allowing coordinates?
No, Musk had a tantrum about people sharing real time coordinates of him. There is an account called Elon Jet that tracked where his private jet went. According to,
which is public information,
by it is public information. He actually went through a few obfuscation measures that this kid actually solved. He made the argument that this is dangerous. Apparently, the straw that broke the camel's back was a stalker that confronted his ex-girlfriend and mother of his child, Grimes, at an airport, and he blamed the Twitter account. There are questions as to whether or not that was the case, but that was apparently the reason why he was like, you should not be sharing real-time coordinates on, or assassination coordinates was the term that he used, and that's why the emailer used it here. But in the course of this email, he was only saying that that's part of the reason why we can prove that he was in Qatar talking to his investors.
Yeah.
Now, let's say, for example, right, a buddy of mine recently got into my truck while the show was on and immediately asked why in the hell I was listening to Ben Shapiro. I generally listen to podcasts and audiobooks at around 1.5 speed, and when sped up and chipmunkified by 50% or so, Jury sounds like Ben Shapiro, except for the absurd straw man arguments or utter lack of nuance and critical thought, of course. So well, there we go. Fun thoughts.
There you go.
Fun.
Well, hold on. Wait, is Ben Shapiro the audio version of how all babies look like Winston Churchill? Like, if you just take men and speed up their voice and raise it an octave, do we all sound like Ben Shapiro? I don't know.
Maybe. Here's another unnamed source for you. Apparently, Ben Shapiro is ripped.
Oh, I've heard that. Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't, like, because he doesn't exactly post thirst traps or anything like that. But apparently, all he does is do his show, pray, and work out. And he's just abs on abs. Which I always thought was very funny, just because at some point he's going to get so mad and he's going to do like the Ned Flanders thing on The Simpsons and just rip open his shirt. He's just going to be rippled. It's going to be hilarious.
Which is the one episode I'll watch. Yeah.
Ben Shapiro is such a wonderful example of somebody being qualitatively different on Twitter versus their podcast. I do not like that guy on Twitter at all. He strikes me as a giant dickhead. I've listened to his podcast twice and was like, all right, this guy seems pretty thoughtful and a reasonable dude. It's interesting to see the contrast.
Mm-hmm. He is.
And he sounds like if you sped up my good friend, Justin Robert, yeah, look at by, that. By 50, 60%.
I don't know. The people just get into politics at different times. And a lot of people got into politics during the Trump era. But it's like, if you look at Ben Shapiro, you're like, oh, this is like every other conservative columnist or conservative radio host. And I think he's probably more like a columnist than he is like a radio host. You're probably going to disagree with his ideas, but he's fairly well-spoken. He's just a conservative commentator in the vein of Thomas Sowell or Rush Limbaugh or Barry Weiss or Matt Taibbi or any of the other hardcore conservative commentators that we have. Jen Appreciator writes, Jen, you are invaluable. Thank you.
Aw, thank you. I love
you're invaluable. You couldn't, we couldn't put a price on you. We couldn't sell you if we wanted. Rebrand Democracy writes, while I agree with Heaton's push for ranked choice voting and have firsthand knowledge here in Maine with the first national case of ranked choice voting in 2018, and it did exactly like it was supposed to, my issue is the branding of it. In a world where every win is considered stolen by the losing side, the last thing we need is more confusion on whether or not your vote counted. While ranked choice voting is perfectly cromulent as a name, I propose we brand it as victory voting or something equally inane that doesn't require a math term to explain it.
Couldn't agree more. That is one of the big problems with policy wonks and electoral reform nerds such as myself, that we get semis for terms like quadratic voting. Quadratic voting, I when I interviewed Glenn Weil, like I read his book and talked to the guy, and I was still struggling to follow how the balancing system worked. The better branding I've heard for ranked choice voting that I think we should have stuck with from the beginning is 1-2-3 voting. And you just go, yep, you vote for your first choice, your second choice, and the guy you hate. 1-2-3 voting, right? Like, that's a very easy way to explain it up top. We should have picked something like that. I don't disagree. I do think at this point we've kind of got path dependency where everybody that's talking about it tends to say ranked choice voting. If you really start talking to policy wonks and electoral reform nerds, they'll get into like, well, no, ranked choice voting is not as good as affirmation voting, where you just pick the candidate you like, where and there's all these different competing things. Ranked choice voting seems to be the one that everybody knows or has heard of, so we're going with that. But I do not disagree with you that we're doing a poor job with the branding and terminology, and we should have picked better things from the get-go.
Maybe everybody who's talking about it now is the reason why it's not successful. So maybe they should stop talking about it, and there should be a new name, and more people should do it. I
disagree with you on that, my friend. Of the many weird abstract Victorian / classical liberal ideas I have, like bringing back Georgism and land value taxes, those are never going to fucking happen. Or like moving the U.S. capital to Colorado. A lot of my ideas are never going to happen. Ranked choice voting and electoral reform have been happening state by state and city by city since at least 2012. There's demonstrable traction going on with that. That is going in a positive trajectory, and there are victories happening regularly.
Well, I'm sure it's going
to
fix everything.
I love how passionate you're about this, Andrew. I don't have to say a word.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Electoral reform and zoning are like the two things that I'm like, I will die on these hills. These are I stand with Odin on this side of the river against the forces of evil.
We're Not Wrong is a production of Dog and Pony Show Audio. Our editor is a very cold Will Saddleberg. Amongst all of the winter stuff, he got punished in Buffalo. He was out of power for a couple days. He lost his heat. He had to be told on the phone how to relight his furnace. It was hell. And his girlfriend got caught at work. She's a caregiver and just was caught in the whiteout on the wrong side of work. And so a big. Get better, recover soon to Will Saddleberg, our editor here. Heaton, what do you got coming up?
Sending hugs and recommendations to move.
I flew him down to Austin a couple of years ago, and I was like, man, just saying, you're at a good age. You spent your time in Western New York. You can always go back, but maybe. If you've only grown up in snow, I'm not going to do my full snow rant about how if you live in snow, you're a masochist. And if you're raising children in snow, you're a child abuser. I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to do that. But I will say that if you have only grown up in snow, have a few years where you don't. Just see what it feels like. Because
we'll come to Austin because it has great breakfast tacos and wonderful people. Don't come here for the weather. For Christ's sakes, it's a swamp with cowboy hats.
Oh God, here we go.
I'm gonna hold back.
Oh Jesus.
By the way, friends, yesterday I dipped into Lake Arcadia, which was 44 degrees. I wasn't able to stay in very long because there was also 30 mile an hour wind, but Yay, cold weather.
For the
weather.
Record, it's been cold as shit here, dude.
Oh, for the... I'm not going to be... Yes, it has for a couple of days. Thank you, Justin. Salient point.
It's 55 degrees right now. Is that too warm? Or is that in the heat and
no,
zone?
No, 55 is fine.
That's in the heat and 50, zone.
55 would be great. Yeah. I would my ideal planet, and I would be willing to kill 6 billion people to get to this number, would be just 55 to 65 degrees and sunny all year round. That would, we were making a boutique planet for me. Like right now, if they were like, you know, if we start putting up carbon in the atmosphere that blocks the sunlight, we can lower the temperature by 10 degrees. Now, about 4 billion people will starve to death. I'd go, flood that air. I never want to have to be over 80 degrees again, ever, unless I'm paying for it in a sauna.
All right. So just for those of you keeping track, Andrew Heaton wants the Germans to take over Italy.
Yeah.
And is now murdering most of the humans.
And is shockingly less likable than Thanos in Infinity War and Endgame. Wow. Didn't see that coming.
All right.
Hey, Heaton, what do you got coming up on your podcast?
So a couple of weeks ago, I brought on Senator Phil Graham to talk about inequality. Now I am going the other direction. I brought on a delightful guest named Joel Kotkin, who wrote a book called The Coming Neo-Feudalism. Had a great conversation with him. Kotkin believes that we are basically entering a period of re-microwave feudalism in which there are lords in the form of oligarchs. There's inequality paired with stagnation. And we spent a lot of time talking about what he calls the clerisy, which is, in his mind, sort of the new Catholic Church of the 21st century, which is green ecoism and woke dogmatism that you find in academia and media and things like that. It's an excellent discussion. Everybody should check it out. However, if you've not listened to my Christmas special on the political orphanage, listen to that first. It's so much work, but it's very, very funny. My show is called The Political Orphanage. It's a funny, funny episode. I don't talk about murdering anybody.
No.
I talk about Germans, but it's about shooting Germans. The Germans are getting shot all the time because we do a World War I sketch. It's super funny. Even if you're like a Robert Reich leftist, you'll find it funny, or you're an anarchist or whatever, it's funny. Check out my Christmas special.
I co-sign on that. It is very, very funny, and go listen to it right now. The Snuffies, how many years? This is the what Snuffies Christmas special?
This is the fifth one.
The fifth Snuffies Christmas special, which I always forget that you have that Snuffies song at the beginning, and it always delights me. It is joy to the world in the theme of Heaton's fictional, well, I mean, allegedly, the sponsor to Heaton's show, which is a diner.
If I may, Justin, our oldest and dearest sponsor is a diner called Snuffies. It's a very good diner. There's low prices. It's a fun place. It is a bit gimmicky, I will admit. This diner, Snuffies, all the waiters and waitresses take your order and deliver it to you while riding a horse. Between you and me, they're kind of horse obsessed. It's very, very horse themed. And so they fund the Christmas episode every year. And the opening number we have is Joy to the World. The Lord has come. He's riding on a horse. So we've managed to infuse horses into that Christmas
carol. The performance of it just always kills me. It is just so, so big and so bold.
Joy to the world, the Lord is come. He's riding on a horse. Let every shrimp and scallop be dished out from a gallop. At Snuffy's, that's our thing. In Yelp reviews, we're king.
It makes me die every single time I listen to it. Jen, congressional dish. You are hip deep in J6, huh?
I am. And I think I'm on track to release it on J6. So, my goal is to take those four charges that were referred to the Justice Department and just give you the evidence. You can hear it for yourself. There'll be very little me in this, but I'm basically taking 10 hearings and bringing them down into one episode, the stuff that really matters. So, I think it'll be a good episode because I'm fascinated by this stuff.
And
January 6th
on
how many horses?
So far, no horses, but quite a few boneheads. So,
okay.
All right. On politics this week, we have an hour and 40 minute conversation with Kevin Ryan about all the biggest stories of 2022. This is our kind of year end tradition.
Nice.
And we tackle a lot of stuff, and I found it to be awesome. So go ahead and get that in your life as well. I know, we're still in the kind of podcasting desert. There's not a lot of new podcasts, so we're happy to grace your podcatcher feed, Jen.
Yeah, I actually forgot to tell you about the episode I just put out because I have been producing content during the desert. And I just released an episode about the FTX debacle. So I watched the hearings about them and the regulations that they're doing. And it was just really fascinating to hear the current CEO just break down all the ways that this company, you know, went to shit. So that episode was really
He was pretty blunt. He was pretty blunt about laying out like these were children that were either too dumb or too greedy. They are incompetent criminals, but criminals nonetheless. This is straight out embezzlement.
Yeah. So his testimony, I think I got his 4 hours of testimony down to like 11 minutes.
Awesome.
And so it's just one thing after another. And then the second half, I looked at the bill that's in the Senate Agriculture Committee. That's the one that's governing Bitcoin for reasons I explain in the episode.
But hey, Chuck Grassley's really on top of cryptocurrency. A good old 92-year-old Chuck Grassley. He's on Twitter, you know.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And those elderly humans are the people that are going to be governing who governs crypto. And so I looked at their bill and I have concerns. So I talk about that too. That's worth listening to before my Jan 6 episode.
Here we go. Well, for Jim Branney and Andrew Heaton, I'm Justin Robert Young. Get the bonus podcast right now if you go to patreon.com/ we're not wrong, because that's the name of this program. We're not wrong.
Dog and Pony Show Audio.